Hi, this is Debbie Voiles, coach at Mojo for Running, with podcast number 105, My Grandma's Marathon Race Report. It's been just a few days since I got home from Duluth, Minnesota, where I ran Grandma's Marathon last Saturday, along with a very large contingent from my local Run Tampa Club. Grandma's is one of the most popular marathons in the country. I had planned to do several videos while I was there, but sadly, I never managed to even one. I always feel like there'll be plenty of time when I get to a destination race, but it gets so hectic between finding appropriate restaurants, figuring out logistics of how to get where, when, going to packet pickup, checking out the race expo, connecting with friends, figuring out where to get good coffee, a must for me, and the required trip to the grocery store. There's just too much to do. Honestly, I was going nonstop, but it was an amazing weekend that provided me with a whole collection of new, extremely valuable memories. I'll try to do better with videos next time, which will be very soon. September 10th, we're doing Big Cottonwood, the Big Cottonwood Marathon in Utah. That's really right around the corner from a training standpoint. This is recovery week for me, and then I'll ever so gradually start to build back up to a reasonable weekly and long run mileage, but then it'll be time to taper again pretty quickly. I love tweaking training strategy and then evaluating the results, so I'm looking forward to this next training cycle. This race, Grandma's Marathon, was much tougher than any of us expected it to be because of the very hot conditions. We took about 65 people from Tampa. 38 did the marathon, 16 did the half, and the rest were our extremely valuable and highly appreciated support crew. I'm going to share with you my take on this popular destination race in just a moment. First, one request. If you haven't yet done so, I'd love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a review for this podcast. I know most of you probably listen on your phones and don't often log in to iTunes, but just know that when you do that, it is extremely helpful to me because it helps get this podcast noticed, helps me get more listeners, which I'm always looking for. Another huge way to help is to post the link to this podcast on your Facebook page, or better yet, mention it to your club members or include a link in your club's newsletter and tell the people at your local running store. I so appreciate it when you spread the word. Grandma's Marathon has been on my bucket list since I first heard of it, and that was soon after my first marathon in 2007. Honestly, I think in the beginning, it was the name that attracted me. The connotation is just so warm and welcoming, and I never heard anything but great reports about that race. Then, a few years later, when I was at Zap Fitness Running Camp in North Carolina, at dinner, I sat next to that weekend's special guest speaker, Carolyn Mather, an incredible runner with a career that has taken her all over to run sometimes more than once, sometimes many times, in all the well-known marathons. I was excited to have the opportunity to pick her brain about all matters running related, but my number one question for Carolyn was, if a person was going to only have the opportunity to do just one marathon in the United States, which one would you recommend? Without much thought, she said, Grandma's. Well, that cinched it. Now that race is checked off of my bucket list. It is still on my list of races to do, though, because I know I'll do it again. It's that kind of race. I imagine most people who do it want to go back. Now let's talk about the race and a bit about marathons in general. Almost no one does just one marathon, despite the fact that most people will say that catchy phrase, one and done, on race day. By the next day, they're always singing a different tune and talking about the next one. The reason almost no one stops at just one is because there are so many variables. Nobody feels like they get it right the first time. The first time, the goal is to finish. But then people want it next time so that they can do better. That's human nature. And it is especially common in runners because we're so anxious for another adventure and we're optimistic. We always know we can do better and we want to. The more marathons you do, the closer you'll get to that great race. And we're always after that. If you register on a whim, and take an unsafe, cavalier attitude towards training, you're virtually guaranteed a bad and unsafe race. An unsafe race that is a bad idea. But even with great training and careful attention to all the details, there's still quite a lot that can go wrong in a marathon. Shorter races are much more within the runner's control, right? With the marathon, you can train perfectly, follow what you know for you is the most effective pre-race protocol, and stick to your race strategy like glue. But guess what? Over the span of 26.2 miles and several hours, a lot can happen still. I'm actually still in the early stages of my marathon career. Grandma's was my 15th. That may seem like a lot, but I know plenty of people who've done double and triple that. In fact, I know people who've done over 100 marathons. For most of my running career, half marathons were not even an option. They didn't become commonplace until the late 90s. Then, with the growing popularity of half marathons, that became a viable and extremely popular option. Anyone, anymore, doing 5Ks and 10Ks are a stepping stone that leads to the inevitable half marathon. And I think one reason we see more people training for their first marathon is because more people are already halfway there doing halves. And when you do your first half, while the thought of a marathon may seem incomprehensible, you also have the wisdom to realize that you once felt exactly that way about the idea of doing a half. That fact causes you to have to admit that if you were to choose to do a marathon, you actually could do it. Does that mean you should? Absolutely not. Not necessarily. One of my favorite quotes is, "Just because you can doesn't mean you should." And that absolutely applies here. You should do a marathon only if it's something you really, in your heart, want to do. But you also have to be in a place in your life when you have the time to commit to the necessary training. And you, of course, need to be in excellent health. There is much to consider. And if you're giving it some thought, I highly recommend you listen to my 3-episode series titled Your First Marathon. That series was episodes 55, 56, and 57. The first episode in that series was entirely devoted to the things you need to consider to make the decision of whether to do a marathon. I've had people write to me after listening to those episodes to say that after listening, they decided it wouldn't be a smart thing for them at this time. Anyway, my point is that for most of my running career, I didn't even think about doing a marathon. And then when I finally did that first half, I didn't give the marathon a second thought. Well, except to wonder how anyone could possibly run twice that far. It wasn't even on my radar. But then I did the thing I talked about in last week's Beginner Runner Village podcast. Now, that's the other podcast that I do, and it's geared to people at the very beginning of their running career. That was episode 29 about motivation. And I pointed out that one of the best things any runner can do to motivate themselves is to spend lots of time with accomplished, experienced runners. Well, after my first half marathon, I started hanging around with people who were doing marathons regularly. And before long, it just seemed like a natural progression for me. The marathon is completely different from halves. Whatever the weather at the beginning of a half, it likely will be pretty much the same for the whole race. There's not time for it to change that much. However, the average race time for a marathon is over 4 hours, and much longer for first-timers. A lot can happen in 4 or 5, or, like on Saturday, many people, because it was so hot, 6 hours. Going up there from Tampa, where we've done all our long runs in weather in the upper 70s to low 80s and very high humidities, we were all pumped up to run in temperatures in the 50s, or worst-case scenario, maybe in the 60s. But that isn't the way it unfolded. As it turns out, it was in the mid-70s, I think 74 at the start of the race, and it reached 84 degrees by the time some people finished. That is really, really rough for a marathon. But that's just the weather. You may also experience a whole host of other physical occurrences, from the unexpected need of a restroom to sudden pains, gastrointestinal issues, falls, and more. Heck, you could even start coming down with the first symptoms of a non-running related problem like the flu or a cold in a four-hour time span. And on a super hot day like that, because many runners ended up walking, it took six or more. Every race brings surprises, and I had several that day. Get this. Around mile 16, I felt a sudden intense stinging and a movement of something small in the palm of my right fist. Of course, I immediately looked, and it was a bee in my hand. I was carrying my hand in a loose fist, like usual, thumb on top. So weird. Why would the bee fly into my hand, and how did that happen without me noticing? It must have been a very loose fist, I guess. I looked down to see a bee literally flying out of my fist at the moment that I felt, or a split second after I felt, that intense pain. I couldn't imagine why or how the bee got in there. Then I had this amazing thought. Maybe I had some traces of goo, the goo I had been consuming every 45 minutes, on the inside of my hand. Here's the really crazy part. Wait for it. What kind of goo do you think I was using? I had just one brand with me that day. You guessed it. Honey Stinger brand. Seriously, that's the only kind I had with me that day. You just can't make this stuff up. Every time I think I've had the strangest thing happen to me on a marathon, something stranger happens. Fortunately, I'm not allergic to bee stings, and it didn't hurt for long. I soon forgot about it, in fact. Didn't think about it again until after the race. I was too preoccupied with coping with the heat and trying to maintain a reasonable pace. Like I said, there are many variables, and many, like weather, are completely out of the runner's control. Since marathons require months of preparation and training, you can't wait and register after you know what the weather will be like. You choose your race based on its reputation, location, elevation, typical weather, and more. But nothing is guaranteed. If the race normally has ideal marathon weather, all you can do is hope that you don't catch it in an off year. But of course, that's what happened at Grandma's this last weekend. No worries. Runners, especially marathon runners, have to be prepared to make modifications on the fly. Some people get all worked up, but what's the point in that? I love this sport. All of it. I embrace it. If that weather is not what I hoped, then maybe it becomes a great training run. Training me to deal with a more intense situation than I had expected, forcing me to test my mettle to get that medal. This was a tough one, even for us, so I can't even imagine how difficult it must have been for people who had not been training in the heat, like we always do here in Florida. That completely explains the much higher than normal DNF rate of a full 20%. That's incredible. A marathon on a day like that with those conditions tests far more than your fitness. It tests your spirit and your fortitude. Running forces you to be flexible, to roll with the punches. And the runners at Grandma's did get punched, but no one went down. Well, maybe actually a few did go down, but most toughed it out and crossed the finish line safely, even if it meant walking an hour or more. Much more exhausted than usual, and maybe even finishing with a bigger smile than they would have had in the relative comfort of more typical Minnesota temperatures. Why would that be? Why a bigger smile? Well, you know the saying, the harder the challenge, the more satisfying the accomplishment. Many people did not finish with the expected or hoped for time, but it's all relative. Several people in my Run Tampa group were doing their first marathon, and several of our members, despite the brutal conditions, actually grabbed bright, beautiful, sparkling new PRs, even in those conditions. And a couple of those PRs were huge. All I can say is, wow. Our group was well-trained, and being from Florida, we're certainly acclimated to the heat. That was not the case for most runners, however, and that concerns me. I'm sure there were some who finished the race despite being in a dangerous physical state due to the heat. Many of them quit, and that was actually wise for them. It always bothers me that people are so worried about the stigma of quitting. They have such a severe aversion to the concept, to the word quit or quitter or quitting at anything, that they continue even when it's unsafe to do so. And that's just foolish. People die in marathons once in a while, usually due to unknown heart conditions, but sometimes because they try to do something they aren't trained for, and sometimes because they refuse to accept being defeated by Mother Nature. There's no shame in that. There just isn't. I don't understand it. Everyone should train appropriately and have a reasonable, sensible, realistic race strategy. But, and that's a big but, they must be prepared to depart from that plan if conditions change. That race strategy, that plan, was for the predicted, expected race conditions. When the conditions change, the strategy must be modified. In Saturday's race, the conditions changed throughout the race. We started the race with green flag conditions. Let me explain. Green flags are color-coded, well, the flags are color-coded, to alert runners of racing conditions. We started under green, which means conditions are good. But as the race progressed, the conditions, due to the heat and humidity and no cloud cover, deteriorated, moving through the whole cycle from green to yellow to red to black. And the black flag indicates extreme and dangerous conditions. As conditions worsened, every runner needed to continually adjust their pace to avoid dangerous results. Unfortunately, no one could have foreseen how quickly conditions would worsen or how bad it would get. Ideally, in that situation, everyone would have been better off to actually start out much slower. But no one knew it would be that extreme. As for me, I was right where I wanted to be at about the halfway point, time-wise. But at that point, I realized it would not be a smart day to stick to my plan. And I'll be honest, there was no way I could have done it. No way. It wasn't an option. My first accommodation was that I started drinking at every aid station, something I never do normally. But I knew proper hydration was going to be critical. Early on, I started modifying my expectations and my pace as conditions worsened, and by that I mean the heat and sun, every few miles. As a result, I was able to still be happy with my performance. My goal for that day was literally a moving target, and I continued to modify my behavior throughout the race. In the end, I was completely happy with how my body responded and how I felt crossing the finish line and post-race. It was a heat test and I passed, but I did plenty of walking. Where early on I only walked through aid stations, later I decided I'd need to walk more. So I came up with the plan of running 5 minutes and walking one. That worked for a while very well. Then, amazingly, I started to feel better and was able to run a couple of miles at a time. But later I was relegated to the 5 ones again. Everybody's different. Some people find they just can't stop and start again. If they're managing in the heat, all systems healthy, then they can keep running and just slow their pace. But I prefer to do a walk run, and I find that I actually run faster during the running segments that way. Only you know how you feel. What worries me is when someone has the symptoms of heat distress and yet they keep running. My question is, why? What is to be gained? I personally don't feel like I have anything to prove. Running is an individual sport. If I were to become dangerously overheated and try to continue, then I'd be proving my foolishness. I've known people who quit, and I respected them for quitting. Quitting is hard, harder than finishing, in a way, because it's hard to cope with after. And if that doesn't make any sense to you, then I have two past podcast episodes you might want to listen to. One is number 18, titled, What Does It Mean to DNF? And the other is number 52, titled, Winners, Losers, and Quitters. Let me depart very briefly from my topic of Grandma's Marathon to make one statement. Runners are not quitters if they set goals and work hard to achieve them. Those people are not quitters. People who make the wise decision not to finish a race because they don't think it's smart or the medical personnel advise against it, those are not quitters. They will live to run another day and they'll be recovered and ready to race again sooner. Those are anything but quitters. Let's call them smarters or wisers or gutsers. as in people with lots of guts. Because it takes guts to quit if you think you might be able to go on. Isn't it better to quit when you get to the point when you think it might be dangerous than to push on until you collapse? I think so. Much, much better. So if you're listening and you DNF'd, feel good about yourself and know that I respect you. Maybe it's a matter of perspective, but I don't like to see people stumbling to move forward, falling, even crawling because they're falling apart, because they're in a bad way. To me, that's just not smart. And that did happen Saturday. By the way, I was extremely glad I had applied sunscreen and wore a hat and my sunglasses that day. All that really made a difference. I loved Grandma's Marathon. It's been on my bucket list for years, and it did not disappoint. The whole city is all about the race. Everybody seems completely supportive, and crowd support was great. Grandma's is a point-to-point course, so we had to take a bus from our hotel to the race start. The bus was on time and comfortable. I did a point-to-point race from the top of a mountain a while back, and I was disappointed because the race director didn't have enough buses. We ended up getting to the starting line only a few minutes before the race started. A serious error. Not so with Grandma's. Everything went like clockwork. Our bus even had a bathroom, which was a super bonus. The course was gorgeous. Over the years, I've taught myself to get out of my head and really look around. Appreciate a few words shared with miscellaneous runners along the way. Enjoy the cheers from the locals. Take in the amazing vistas and slap some outstretched hands. Saturday, early in the race, I could look to my left out over Lake Superior and I could barely make out the horizon line, but I could see a lone boat, fisherman, I guess. Everything like an eerie painting, all in hues of gray. If I hadn't been racing, and if I had had my phone, I'd have stopped to snap a photo. But I'll just have to keep referring to the saved mental image. And maybe I'll get to see it again one day. I read the signs. One I really liked was, "If Trump can run, so can you." Another said, "Worst parade ever." Another said, "Why do the cute ones always run away?" You've probably seen all of those. And I have too, but I still enjoy seeing them. My favorites, though, are the signs made by kids cheering for their moms and dads. These always move me as I imagine growing up with a marathon parent. When I think of how this must affect the child's view of fitness and goal setting. Of course, this isn't always a good thing. Not in my mind, because I do know of obsessed running parents, and I can imagine this is hard on the whole family. All things in moderation is my motto. Sometimes when parents have an intense personality, I feel like they may resent the fact that family life can sometimes get in the way of optimal marathon preparation and performance. I wish these parents would be more relaxed about their racing and realize they'll have plenty of time when the kids are older. I don't want them to miss family time just to do marathons or resent the times when family commitments interfere either. But I'm happy to see that families, many families, make it work, and that it becomes the family's project, which must be great. You've heard me say this before. Running should occupy the place in your life, the space in your life, where it can be the most beneficial, the role of enriching your life. And that role will need to change over time. Some of the time, if the other spouse is on board and if the running parent is relaxed about the sport, then it can be a wonderful experience that makes the whole family proud and motivates kids to follow in their parents' footsteps. The whole process of goal setting, completing process goals along the way, coping with setbacks, being flexible to accommodate family priorities, and especially with the marathon, demonstrating the tenacity to work long and hard, not over a period of days or weeks, but a period of months, is a great opportunity for infinite teachable moments. It becomes a family adventure. Every member shares in the satisfaction of a lofty goal reached, and everyone learns about themselves and their loved ones. I loved the caring residents along the race course held hoses to spray people seeking to cool down, and I ran through every single one I could get to. The water was ice cold, too. Water in a hose in Florida is never cold. Never. Certainly not ice cold. Several residents stood along the course with buckets of ice cubes, and some set up extra water stops in their driveways. You gotta love it. My very favorite entertainment along the way was two older men, probably in their late 70s, singing and playing a guitar, singing the same song over and over. Well, I mean, during the time when I was close enough to hear them, they finished the song, paused about 5 seconds, and then started the same song over and over. Grandma's offered plenty of amenities, but one I especially appreciated was the careful placement of porta-potties along the race course. There were plenty, and when I needed one, I just started checking the little green available indicator until I ran past one that was open, which didn't take long. I did not even have to stand in line, saving me precious minutes. There were cold sponges, too, which were especially appreciated in the hot weather. I placed one on the back of my neck, tucked it at the base of my running at the top of my running bra, and left it there for the last 10 miles, cooling me in the beginning and then protecting my neck from the sun. Ironically, many in our group returned to Tampa with a pretty good sunburn, looking much like the tourists that we often see who come down for a few days of beach time and their pale skin isn't quite prepared for the intense sun. One distinctive element of this race is that you don't get your race shirt until after you cross the finish line. That's a first for me. No complaints here. The distribution of all the post-race amenities was organized and efficient, as was packet pickup and the expo. I had no problem retrieving my gear bag either, which, by the way, they called sweat bags in Minnesota. Again, ironic, because we call them gear bags here in Florida, where we actually do a lot more sweating. Upon arrival in Duluth, we stopped in at the Duluth Grill, a place I found on Yelp when we were still a few miles out of town. Lots of homegrown veggies, an option to get gluten-free toast, bison options, and a great creative menu. The servers wear shirts there that say, "Veggies from our lot." And they mean it. There are indeed veggie gardens surrounding the perimeter of the parking lot. We went back there Saturday after the race for a burger. I almost never eat hamburgers, but for some reason, that's what I always crave after a marathon. Go figure. I think your body tells you what it needs, and I always try to respond, so I have a burger. Later, my Run Tampa group met at Ficker's Ale House for a post-race celebration, and we had a lot to celebrate. We had 38 Run Tampa members do the marathon, as I said, and 16 did the Gary Bjorklund half, and even more made the trip. So we were really ready for a party after that day. All of our runners finished, by the way. It was super tough, but our runners did train in the heat, so I don't feel like any of them were in any danger. We celebrated great accomplishments, too. Amazingly, some of our runners PR'd, and actually, we had quite a few. Imagine that. And several completed their first marathons on that day. What tough conditions for a first marathon. Dave Yancey, our event director extraordinaire, had every element of the trip planned well ahead of time, from flights to meals to transportation and even lodging. He is truly amazing. And by the way, he flew straight from Minnesota to California, where he'll be doing the Western States 100-mile endurance run this weekend. So, as excited as we all were last weekend, we'll be just as excited this weekend as we root for Dave. Carla Nolan, our awesome, incredible club president, provided hilarious live, on-the-spot reports and interviews throughout the weekend for the 400 Run Tampa members back home to see on Facebook. Our head running coach, Maria Williams, somehow managed to keep track of all her runners and provide just what they needed. It was clear that she had them properly prepared. I could never imagine managing that number of runners, but she does it with the greatest skill, combining knowledge, experience, and an equal amount of therapy, which is especially valuable when runners have to adjust to challenging conditions like we did on Saturday. My Run Tampa leadership team is the best, amazing in every way. So kudos to those first timers, those PRs, my leadership team. Run Tampa's experience was wonderful. And kudos to everyone else too. To all who ran a smart race, adjusting your goals based on the conditions, and to those who tried to adjust but learned that they needed to adjust just a little more. Seriously, that's why people keep doing marathons. Learning what your body needs in various situations is a part of the process. You can only get that personal feedback by getting out there and doing it. Big kudos to the Grandma's staff and to the city of Duluth for putting on such an amazing event. I'll be back, I promise. You can bet on that. I would recommend it to anyone. Now, that's only part of the story. In the next podcast, I'll talk about some things I decided to test out over the month ahead of the race as regards supplements, diet, and more. I'll give you a hint. I have never experienced so little soreness or bounced back this quickly after a marathon. And when you're 62, that makes you feel pretty good. I feel like I've finally discovered some things. So I'm convinced that my new regimen had the desired effect. I'll talk about that in the next episode. Now, here is your homework. If you don't have a race bucket list, make one. Really, it matters. Everybody should have goal races. When I look at my race bucket list now, the race currently at the top is Big Sur. In fact, I'll share some others on my list, although besides Big Sur, they're not in any particular order. The Deadwood Mickelson Trail Marathon, that's in South Dakota. Avenue of the Giants in Northern California. Twin Cities, obviously in Minnesota. Niagara Falls International in Canada. Beta Breakers, that's a 12K in San Francisco that my son does every year, so I will get out there to do that sometime. Houston, Fargo, those are both marathons. San Luis Obispo Marathon. The Boulder 10K, I was actually registered for that last year, had my plane tickets and everything, but that's the weekend that my dad passed. So I will get back out there one day. I'll do the Portland Marathon, the Hood to Coast Relay, the Cover Bridges Half in Vermont, the Peachtree 10K Road Race in Atlanta, and that's only the ones on my bucket list in the continental U.S., so I guess I'm going to be busy for many years to come, but that's good. I've got a whole other bucket list for the ones outside the continental United States. I'd love to hear your bucket list too. I'm going to post on the Mojo for Running Facebook page asking people to name the top races on their bucket list. So look for that, and I hope you'll comment. The more the better. By the way, my next marathon, as I mentioned before, will be another destination race with my Run Tampa group. Big Cottonwood in Utah on September 10th. Maybe I'll see you out there. Now, just a quick reminder. If you enjoyed this podcast, it's super helpful if you support it by going to the Mojo for Running website and clicking on the coffee cup. That will take you to a page with options for several levels of support. Some people have been doing that with every single episode. So I cannot even express how important that is and how much it means to me, and how much that helps me keep putting out this podcast. Also, you can go to iTunes and leave a review, or just click a number of stars. Now, today's quote. It's from Dina Castor. I think when the quote comes from a famous runner, I'll give you a bit of a description of that runner's career highlights. Castor holds the American record for the marathon, half marathon, and various other distances. She won the bronze medal in the women's marathon in the 2004 Olympics in Athens. This is what she said. As an athlete, I found aside from hard work, the greatest tools for success are optimism and gratitude. These practices have led to happiness, and the routine pause to realize I am living the life I love and dreamed of. Again, that's from Dina Castor. I love that. Much of what I heard from our runners and others after the race Saturday was optimism and gratitude. Gratitude for being fortunate enough to be able to be there. Gratitude to the volunteers and the race organization. And optimism that the next race won't be so hot. And that they were just happy to have been able to finish and to have the opportunity to see the amazing scenery. All seeming to realize that it's certainly not just about the race. As much as anything else, it was about sharing the experience with our amazing running family that's Run Tampa. There's so much more. I'll talk to you soon.